Yesterday, we were looking at the Prabhupada's introduction, where he's beginning a discussion on why Krishna chose Arjuna as an eligible student. What is so wonderful about Arjuna, or what did Krishna find in Arjuna? What did he see in Arjuna that he chose him as an eligible student? And he found out that Prabhupada explains with reference to the Gita text, Bhaktosime Sakha Cheti Rakasya Visheta Duttama, that from Krishna's perspective, he's telling Arjuna that you are my bhakta. And Prabhupada explains the implication is he's not a Nirvishesha Brahma Upasaka. He is not the worshipper of the impersonal Brahman. In other words, he is not an impersonalist Jnani. He is not a Paramatma Upasaka. He is not a yogi focused on the Paramatma. So he is a Bhakta. So he is the highest of the transcendentalists. And then I pointed out that there are two levels of bhaktas. There are sadhaka bhaktas and there are siddha bhaktas. The sadhaka bhaktas, they are engaged in a practice to revive their dormant relationship with Krishna. And that dormant relationship with Krishna, once it is achieved, then the person is said to be a siddha. A siddha means he has one of the five relationships with Krishna. He has a relationship with the Supreme Lord. Arjuna was in this position. He was a friend of the Lord, which means he was established in his Swarup, in his Sambandha, in his Jaiva Sambandha, in his Bhagavad Sambandha, in his relationship as a Jiva, in his relationship with the Supreme Lord. So therefore, Arjuna was a devotee of this type, and therefore he is eligible to understand what Krishna speaks. The next point that Prabhupada analyzes is, what is Arjuna's way of acceptance of Bhagavad Gita? How does he take the Bhagavad Gita? What is his opinion of, what is his understanding of whatever Krishna has spoken? And we see, right at the middle, 10th chapter, texts 12 to 14, actually, this is immediately after Krishna speaks the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The essence of Bhagavad Gita is presented by Krishna in four shlokas in the 10th chapter. 10th chapter, texts 8, 9, 10, 11. If you open chapter 10. Texts 8, 9, 10, 11. This is called Chatushloki Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante maam buddha bhava samandita. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotion service and worship me with all their hearts. Machitta madgata prana bodhayantah parasparam kathayantah cha mam nityam dushyanti cha ramanti cha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Tesham satadayuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadanu buddhi yogam tam yenamam puyanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Tesham evan kamparatham aham ajnana jamtamaha ashayamyatma bhavastho jnanadipena bhaswata. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So this is the essential nucleus of the Bhagavad Gita, these four verses. Immediately after hearing that, Arjuna speaks these verses. Arjuna Vacha, பரம் பிரம்ம பரம் தாம பவித்ரம் பரமம் பவான் புருஷம் சாஸ்வதம் திவ்யம் ஆதிதேவம் அஜம் விபும் ஆஹு ஸ்வாம் ரிஷய சர்வே தேவர்ஷி நாரதஸ்ததா அசிதோ தேவலோ வியாச ஸ்வயம் செய்வ பிரவீஷிமே சர்வமேதத் ரிதம் மன்யே என்மாம் வததி கேசவ நஹீதே பகவன் வியக்திம் விதுர் தேவா நதானவா. And in Prabhupada's introduction, he analyzes these verses. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala and Vyasa confirm this truth about you. And now, you yourself are declaring it to me. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. These are very, very significant statements. Arjuna accepts Krishna as Param Brahma, the Supreme Brahma. The reason why he says that Krishna is Param Brahma and not simply Brahma is because sometimes the living entities are also called Brahma. Living entities are also considered to be spirit. Therefore, he makes it clear that he is Param Brahma, which means he is a Supreme Brahman. Every living being is Brahman, but the Supreme Living Being or the Supreme Personality of God is the Supreme Brahman. And then he says he is Param Dhamma, which means he is the Supreme Rest, Supreme Abode. Pavitram means Krishna is pure, untainted by material contamination. Purusham means that he is the Supreme Enjoyer. Shashvatam, eternal, divyam, transcendental. Adidevam, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ajam, the unborn, and Vibhum, the greatest. You see, this is Arjuna's understanding of Krishna's position based on whatever Krishna has spoken so far. And on top of it, Arjuna says, this is not just my understanding, this is the understanding of all the sages. Ahustvam Rishayas Sarve. All the sages, all bona fide mystics, everyone has this understanding of you, that Krishna or Vishnu is Param Brahma, Param Bhakta, Pavitram, Paramam, Purusham, Shashvatam, Divyam, Adidevam, Ajam Vibhum. They are all Vaishnavas. Specifically, Devarshi Narada. Now Narada is well known as a Vaishnava. Asita, Devala, Vyasa. Vyasa is also well known as a Vaishnava. Swayam Chaiva Bravishi mein, and you yourself are telling this. And then he says, Sarvameta Dhritam Manye, I accept everything you say to be true. I accept everything you say to be true. Whatever you are saying is correct. He doesn't say, Krishna, whatever you speak about spiritual subjects, I accept. Whatever you speak about material subjects, I don't accept. Whatever you say is true. Whatever you say is true. Spiritual, material, within my understanding, outside of my understanding, whatever you say is true. And you see, in fact, Arjuna maintains a certain etiquette. Look at, for instance, chapter 3, right at the beginning. Arjuna said, O Janardhan, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? Chapter 3, text 1, right? Okay. Then he says, Vyamishreneva vakyena buddhim mohe siva me tadekam vada nishchitya yena shreyoham apnuya. Please tell me decisively what will be most beneficial for me. My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. He is saying that I am bewildered. I am unable to understand. Not that you are wrong. He never makes the statement that you are wrong. Similarly, we will find again at the beginning of chapter 5 also. See. Sanyasam karmanam krishna punar yogam cha samshasi yat shreya eteyo rekam tanme bruhi sunishchitam. O Krishna, first of all you ask me to renounce world. Then again you recommend work with devotion. Now, will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? At no point he is accusing Krishna that you are saying something wrong. And even in the fourth chapter, if you look at how Arjuna, it is very important to analyze how Arjuna is thinking, speaking, because we are emulating Arjuna. This is chapter 4, text 4. Aparam bhavato janma, param janma vivasvata. Kathametad vijaniyam tvam adau praptavaniti. Arjuna said, the sun god Vivasvan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you instructed the science to him? Arjuna and Krishna, they appear to have been born in the same year. Arjuna was born to Kunti, and Krishna was born to Devaki. Apparently, if you just see the way materialistic people see. But Krishna made a remarkable statement that he instructed the sun god some millions of years back. Arjuna doesn't say, Krishna, don't talk this kind of nonsense. He doesn't speak like that. He's simply asking, how can I understand? Kathametad vijaniyam. How am I supposed to understand this? How am I supposed to understand this? So he's just saying that, the idea is, he's always giving the benefit of a doubt, even if something is confusing. And therefore, Arjuna's policy is, sarvametad ritamanye. Whatever you say is correct. I am not able to understand. That's my problem. That's not your problem. So that is the attitude with which we have to study the Bhagavad Gita. I accept whatever Krishna says to be true. How it is true? That is a subject matter for deliberation. But it is true. That is how we study Bhagavad Gita. That is how we study Srimad Bhagavatam. Fifth canto. It is true. How it is true? We don't know. We will struggle to try to understand. We are products of Kali Yuga, so we may not be able to understand clearly, but it is true. Sarvametadritam manye. Similarly, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Whatever is stated, we accept it as true. Arjuna also says that the personality of the Lord is very difficult to understand, that and that he cannot be known even by the great demigods. This means that the Lord cannot even be known by personalities greater than human beings. So how can a human being understand Lord Sri Krishna without becoming his devotee? So that is the whole point. That is the whole point. Unless we become a devotee of Krishna and allow Krishna to reveal his nature to us, we cannot understand it. There is a famous statement in the Upanishads. Nayamatma pravachanena labhyah. The Supreme Lord cannot be understood merely by attending lectures. Nayamatma pravachanena labhya, nam medhaya, not by using your intelligence, na bhuna shutena, not by excessive study, by a lot of study. Then how do you understand? The Upanishad says, yam me vaisha vrinate tena labhya. Whoever the Supreme Being chooses to allow himself to be understood, only that person can understand. Yam me vaisha vrinate tena labhyaha tasyaisha atma vivrunate tanam swam. He reveals his spiritual body, he reveals his nature to such a person whom he chooses. He decides whether he wants to allow a person to be capable of understanding him or not. So that is the most important point that we gather from Arjuna's statement about Krishna and how he is trying to understand. So that is how the Bhagavad Gita should be taken up. In other words, we have to be bhaktas, not impersonalist jnanis, not semi-personalist yogis, interested in impersonal Brahman or the localized Paramatma. We have to be interested in becoming pure servants of Bhagavan. That is one thing, to be a devotee. It is best understood by someone who is fixed in his Swarup. The other thing is, we have to understand Krishna the way Arjuna understands Krishna. And we should be willing to accept everything that Krishna is saying. What does that mean? That means Bhagavad Gita should be taken up in a spirit of devotion. One should not think that he is equal to Krishna, nor should he think that Krishna is an ordinary personality or even a very great personality. Lord Shri Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So this is what is the meaning of spirit of devotion. We have to enter into the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. We should accept the spirit of devotion that is required to understand Bhagavad Gita. This is what it means. It means we accept Krishna as supreme personality of Godhead. And what does that mean? That means we should accept that we are not equal to Krishna. We are not equal to Krishna. We were not equal to Krishna. We are not equal to Krishna. We will never be equal to Krishna. Krishna is not an ordinary person. He is not even a great person. He is the one unequaled, unparalleled supreme being. Advitiya. One without a second. Asamavrudhva. One who has no equal, one who has no superior. So if we accept Krishna or Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it is possible to understand Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada says, it is with this submissive spirit that we can approach the Bhagavad Gita. We should keep in mind, the Bhagavad Gita is non-different from Krishna. So while we try to understand Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is deciding whether he should allow himself to be understood by us. This is the famous Dhrigdrishya Vichar of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. That when you are trying to see Krishna, in reality Krishna is looking at you and deciding whether he should allow himself to be understood by you. So Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, these are non-different from the Supreme Lord. So unless we please the Supreme Lord, we will not be allowed to understand. In the Western world, in the universities, even in India, the universities are amongst people who don't believe in the scriptures, when they study the scriptures, they very strongly say that we don't believe this Indian idea. By Indian idea, they mean the traditional idea. That only one who has a certain attitude, a specific type of attitude, if he has that attitude and he studies the scriptures, only then he will be given access to scriptures. So they call it special access, the theory of special access. That only these persons have special access, only they can understand Bhagavad Gita, only they can understand Bhagavatam. So amongst the non-devotees in the universities, they don't like this idea. They say, we don't believe in this concept. Anyone who knows Sanskrit, who knows grammar, anyone with a certain amount of background learning, anyone who has that thing, he is capable of understanding Bhagavad Gita. He is capable of understanding Bhagavatam. But that is not Krishna's idea. That is not Krishna's idea. Okay, then Prabhupada begins to discuss the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. Why was the Bhagavad Gita spoken? What is the purpose? And Prabhupada points out that the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to deliver mankind from the nescience of material existence. Nescience means ignorance. But then he also points out that it is also to free human beings from suffering. It's also presented in order to free human beings from temporary life. These three words are very important. Sat, Chit and Ananda. Sat means eternity. Chit means knowledge. Ananda means bliss, happiness. The very opposite of this is asat. Achit, nirananda. Asat, achit, nirananda. Right now we are caught up in asat, achit, nirananda. We are caught up in this. Asat means temporary existence. Now as living beings, we will learn from Bhagavad Gita, we don't die. Living entities do not die by themselves. But because I am engaged in this body is going to die. And because I identify with this body, I am always afraid that I am going to die. So I'm artificially put into a situation which has got nothing to do with me. This is like, for instance, you are drugged with a certain type of drug which gives you the desire to search for poison and drink it. And you firmly believe that is actually very good for you. You have developed a certain desire which is the very opposite of what is actually good for you. Similarly, the soul's nature is to be alive and never die. It doesn't have to be in his anxiety about dying, because the soul actually doesn't die. We have our own personality independent of this temporary personality. Right now I'm in a man's body and I'm thinking I'm with Gauranga. But in my next life, if I'm born as a girl, then I'll think I'm some girl. Next life, if I'm born as a bird, I'll think I'm a bird. And in each life, I'm always going to be worrying that somebody is going to kill me. But in reality, I cannot even be killed. So the first problem is we are put under asat, artificially. Achit means ignorance. We are hardly aware of what is going on. We don't even understand our own body, how the body works. We don't understand material nature. We don't understand many things. We are given some partial knowledge in the form of education. That is achit. But liberated souls in the spiritual world, we are not like that. We actually know what we know. We know about ourselves, we know about others. The third problem is nirananda. We are in a miserable situation. Constitutionally, we don't have this problem. It's like, if you are put in a jail, in a prison, then after some time you think that's normal life. In reality, the life of freedom outside the jail, that is normal life. But after some 10-15 years of being in a jail, you think it's normal to sit in a queue and eat that bad food. You think it's normal to break bricks. You think it's all normal. You think it's normal to be put in a prison filled with mosquitoes with no light after 7:30 p.m. You think it's all normal. You think it's completely normal. Similarly, right now we think that it's normal to be in a miserable situation. Right from the beginning it's normal. And our whole life is basically it's a struggle to get out of distress. But this is very, very abnormal. This is not our natural position. So Bhagavad Gita is spoken to deliver us from asat, achit, nirananda, and to bring us back to our constitutional position of sat, chit, ananda, Bhagavad Bhava, the status or the platform on which the Supreme Personality of Godhead exists and enjoys pastimes. So Krishna is very eager to bring us to that plane. But even though Bhagavad Gita is providing that, in reality, Krishna is not targeting the Bhagavad Gita for everyone. He is leaving it out open, but in his mind, he is looking at a small section of people. What is happening here? You see, everyone is suffering. I draw a big circle. Suppose this circle refers to everyone who is suffering. All conditioned souls come inside this. But we are talking about conditioned souls who are capable of discrimination. So we are talking of, amongst the conditioned souls, we are talking of human beings. Human beings are capable of discrimination. They are capable of thinking how to solve these problems. They are capable of that. Amongst them, so this is conditioned souls. The outer circle. Inner circle are human beings. And even within them, it's not that all human beings who are suffering. They're all suffering, conditioned souls are suffering. Human beings are also suffering, obviously. But it's not that all human beings are ready writes of Bhagavad Gita. Amongst these human beings, there are some who are seeking a way out. These are the mumukshus, people who are seeking liberation from misery. There are some who are actually convinced that there must be a way out of this suffering. That most people actually don't even come to this point. It's like a few years back, one of my relatives was telling me that this material world is a place of misery and that's all it is. There is no way of solving these problems. You people are imagining that there is a way to solve these problems or to get out of these problems. That's all. Everybody from birth to death and beyond, before birth or after death, if at all there is anything, it's all misery. No way out. So very few people actually understand that it is possible to get out of suffering, and they're inquiring for that possibility. They're seeking it out. They're trying to find out how to get out, what is the way. These people are interested in mokshopaya jigyasa. They're looking for, they're inquisitive about the pathway for liberation from threefold miseries. They want to get out. Amongst them, there are some who are willing to accept. These are eligible people. There are some who are eligible. They are willing to accept Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that He is giving the solution to this in the form of Bhagavad Gita, where He says that you should become His pure devotee. So there are some. And actually, when Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, He's talking to these people. So even though He is speaking in a public forum, the actual message is targeted towards people who have that interest. He wishes that everybody comes to that point. But actually His target is that. Just like sometimes here also, in our temples, various temples, we will find that they make some specific announcement in the middle of in the midst of a large crowd, like Mangala Arati. They say, today the bus is going to Shantipur. Those of you who have already paid the tickets and got the coupons, please be there at 5:30 in the morning near the main gate. Now that, even though it is spoken in the midst of some 300 devotees, there may be only some 30 devotees who have had that coupon. So you are making a specific announcement to a small subset of people in the midst of a large group. It's commonly done. So similarly, Krishna is also doing that. He's speaking the Bhagavad Gita, but he's speaking for these people. So Prabhupada writes, every activity of the human being is to be considered a failure unless he inquires about the nature of the Absolute. Therefore, those who begin to question why they are suffering or where they came from and where they shall go after death are proper students for understanding Bhagavad Gita. The sincere student should also have a firm respect for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a student was Arjuna. So Arjuna was in that category. And because he was in that category, then he was qualified. And Krishna is using Arjuna as a pretext. He is using Arjuna in order to teach other living entities who have come to this point. Actually, we are all swallowed by the tigers of nescience. But the Lord is very merciful upon living entities, especially human beings. To this end, He spoke the Bhagavad Gita, making His friend Arjuna His student. And then He begins a discussion on what does the Bhagavad Gita actually talk about? What is the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita? Now, I'll just regress a little bit now into, or rather, move into Bhaktivinoda Thakur's introduction to his second commentary on the Gita, which is in line with Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary on the Gita. Because now, from now onwards, Krishna, Prabhupada begins to talk about five basic truths which are taught in the Bhagavad Gita and which are also presented in other scriptures. These concept of five basic truths are presented by Baladev Vidya Bhushan in many of his writings. And in his introduction to Bhagavad Gita, in his introduction to his Govinda Bhashya commentary, in his introduction to Ishopanishad commentary. And that is directly based on one small book composed by Baladev Vidya Bhushan's guru, Radha Damodar Goswami. Radha Damodar Goswami wrote a book called Vedanta Syamantaka. And he detailed, he gave one chapter for each of these basic truths. So now that book is so detailed, I'm not consulting that, because he goes into great detail to describe. It appears to be Radha Damodar's composition. It appears to be that. Sometimes it is said that Baladev Vidya Bhushan wrote it. But the language appears to be slightly different. There are some who say that it was written by Radha Damodar, some who say it is written by Baladev Vidya Bhushan. At the end of the book, that book he says, the person who has a name beginning with Radha Damodar has written this book. Now of course you can interpret it in a certain way. There are some scholars who interpret it in a certain way to say that actually is written by Baladev Vidya Bhushan. Anyway, it generally passes on under the name of Radha Damodar Goswami. That's how we respectfully did it. Okay. Bhaktivinoda's second commentary on the Gita is called Vidvat Ranjan. The previous commentary from which I was reading out was called Rasika Ranjan. And that was his first commentary. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he printed an edition of Bhagavad Gita with the explanation of Vishwanath Chakravarti, and he presented his own commentary in Bengali. That was his first commentary. That was called Rasika Ranjan, and I was reading out from that previously. But then later he printed an edition of Bhagavad Gita with the commentary of Baladev Vidya Bhushan. And he wrote another commentary. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote another second Bengali commentary that is called Vidvat Ranjan. Vidvat Ranjan means that which pleases the scholars. The first commentary was called Rasika Ranjan, that which pleases advanced devotees. So this accompanies Baladev Vidya Bhushan's commentary. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur liked this particular edition of Bhagavad Gita very much. The one with Baladev Vidya Bhushan's commentary and Bhaktivinoda's second commentary. Bhaktivinoda also printed the first commentary of Madhvacharya. That's called Gita Bhashya. He printed that also. Mayavad Meghavrita Gita Tattva Chandramrita Bhashyaka Sri Vidya Bhushan Panchatattva Kripa Bale Prakashiya Bhumandale Purnananda Kailo Vitaram. The nectarian moon of the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita was covered by the cloud of Mayavad. And therefore, the great commentator Sri Vidya Bhushan, by the mercy of the Panchatattva, he manifested, he removed those clouds and manifested the truth of Bhagavad Gita. And by that, he made the world very happy. Filled with happiness. Tar bhashyanusare gitamrita bhashyakare bhakati vinod khudra ati vidvad ranjanakhya kuriya che bhasha vyakha shuddha bhakte kuriya pranati. In accordance with that commentary of Baladev Vidya Bhushan, Bhakti Vinod, who is very insignificant, has composed a Bengali paraphrase called Vidvat Ranjan, having offered obeisances to the pure devotees. And then he summarizes what comes in Baladev Vidya Bhushan's commentary. I'll read a little bit from Baladev's commentary, and you'll see very quickly begins a discussion on these five topics. So when it comes to the five topics, I'll be going back in between Baladev and Prabhupada. Atha sukhachit ghanaha swayam bhagavan achintya shakti purushottamaha svasankalpayat vichitra jagat udayadhir virinchyadi sanchitya charanaha svajanmadi lilaya svatulyan sahavir bhutan parshadan prakashayan tayaiva jivan bahu navidya sharduli vadanad vimochya swantar dhanottar bhavinaha anya udidirshuhu ahava murdhani svatma bhutam api arjanam avitarkya swashaktya samohan ivakurvan tanmoha vimarjana apadeshena saparikara svatma yathat nyaik nirupikam swajito upanishadam upadishat. Krishna is the personification of spiritual bliss and knowledge. He is Swayam Bhagavan. He possesses inconceivable potencies. He is the Supreme Personality of God at Purushottama. Merely by his desire, this variegated world, the creation, maintenance, destruction and so on of this variegated world happens. His lotus feet is meditated upon by Virinchi, Lord Brahma and others. So he manifested in this world. He performed various pastimes such as his birth, and he delighted his associates who had also descended along with him, who had also appeared in this world along with him, and who by his arrangement appeared as his equals, and by those very same pastimes he delivered several living entities from the mouth of the tigress of ignorance. See, in the previous page Prabhupada spoke about, actually we are all swallowed by the tigress of nescience. Tigress of ignorance. Ignorance is considered, Maya is considered a tigress because she bites you. She comes like that and she bites you. She's not a beautiful little cat. She's a tigress. Maya is a tigress. So he delivered various living entities from the tigress of ignorance. And he began to consider the situation of those living entities, other living entities who are going to appear in the future. He wanted to deliver them. With that in mind, he made Arjuna as if bewildered by his inconceivable potency. Even though Arjuna is of the same nature as himself, liberated soul, by his inconceivable potency, he made him appear as if he was bewildered. And on the pretext of removing that illusion, he spoke the Gita Upanishad. Now, that Gita Upanishad is a book which primarily presents knowledge about himself, accurate knowledge about himself, along with his paraphernalia, along with his paraphernalia. Tasyam khalu Ishvara jiva prakriti kala karmani pancharkha varnyante. And in that Gita Upanishad, there are five subjects that are brought up. And these are the five subjects. Ishvara. Karma. Topic 1. Ishvara, topic 2, Jivas, topic 3, Prakriti, topic 4, Kala, time, topic 5, Karma. So these are the topics that come out in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada writes the same. The subject of the Bhagavad Gita entails the comprehension of five basic truths. First of all, the science of God is explained. And then the constitutional position of the living entities, jivas. There is Ishvara, which means the controller. And there are jivas, the living entities which are controlled. So there is one controller. Ishvara in Sanskrit means the controller. And the jiva means the living entities. And because Ishvara and Jiva are different, therefore the living entities are called controlled. So you have the controller, one controller, and you have many controlled. If a living entity says that he is not controlled but that he is free, he is insane. The living being is controlled in every respect, at least in his conditioned life. So in the Bhagavad Gita, the subject matter deals with the Ishvara, the supreme controller, and the Jivas, the controlled living entities. Prakriti, material nature, and time, the duration of existence of the whole universe or the manifestation of material nature, and karma, activity, are also discussed. From Bhagavad Gita, we must learn what God is, what the living entities are, what Prakriti is, what the cosmic manifestation is, how it is controlled by time, and what the activities of the living entities are. So these are five subject matters. Teshu vibhuram vid Ishvaraha anusam vid Jivaha sattvadi gunatrayashtrayo dravyam prakritihi traigunya shunyam jadadravyam kalaha pum prayatna nishpadyam adrishtadi shabdavachyam karmeti tesham lakshanani. So then he begins to give a definition of each of these. And each of these definitions, for each of these definitions, Prabhupada practically devotes a paragraph. Because in Sanskrit amongst learned authors, when they give a definition, the definition is exactly that. It is that, it is neither less than that, nor more than that. They train you in traditional education how to define. When you define, your definition has to be neither too narrow, nor too wide. It has to be exactly that. So he gives these definitions that Ishvara is vibhusamvita. He is the infinitely conscious living being. That is Ishvara. Prabhupada begins to describe. Out of these five basic subject matters in Bhagavad Gita, it is established that the Supreme Godhead or Krishna or Brahman or the Supreme Controller or Paramatma, you may use whatever name you like, is the greatest of all. The living beings are in quality like the Supreme Controller. The second is anusambhit jivaha. The living entity is an atomic conscious entity. So the living entity, the living beings are in quality like the Supreme Controller. So that is the similarity between the Lord and the living entities. The living entities are qualitatively one with God, but quantitatively they are different from God. This is a very, very important point. Very important point. It is very important to repeatedly keep in mind that we are quantitatively different from God, but we are qualitatively one with God. And the Vedic literature, they devote a lot of time to help qualified students understand this point, that we are qualitatively one with God. It is wrong to say that we are quantitatively one with God. Quantitatively we are different from God. God is infinite. We are finite. So it is very wrong to say that we are quantitatively one with God. We are quantitatively different from God. Qualitatively we are one with God. And it is equally wrong to say that we are qualitatively different from God. It is very, very wrong to say that. Vaitadvai bhayam bhavati, the Upanishads warn. If you think that you are qualitatively different from God, then you get put into a situation of fear. because that's when material existence begins. You belong to whatever you are qualitatively one with. I belong to God, I belong to the kingdom of God, because I am qualitatively one with Him. I am not qualitatively one with material nature. I am qualitatively different from material nature. I have nothing to do with this world. I am a spirit soul, spiritual being. This is all material world. So I have nothing to do with this. The moment I identify with this world, I am gone. So I have to identify with God qualitatively. So it is very, very important that we keep this in mind. Qualitatively, we are like the Supreme Being. In fact, you cannot even have the impetus to perform progressive devotion service if you don't understand this point that we are qualitatively one with Krishna and that we are quantitatively different from Krishna. Both are equally important. Very, very important. For instance, here Prabhupada gives an example of how he takes one quality that is there in the living entity and in the Lord. For instance, the Lord has control over the universal affairs of material nature. So the Lord controls material nature. Okay. That is one feature of the Lord. Now the living entities, they are also trying to control space. They are also trying to control planets. We also try to control whatever we can. So Prabhupada explains that this quality of trying to control is there in Krishna. So he gives that as an example of how we are one with God in that qualitative sense. The jivas or the living entities have been accepted by the Lord, as we will note in the later chapters, as his parts and parcels. A particle of gold is also gold. A drop of water from the ocean is also salty. And similarly, we the living entities, being part and parcel of the Supreme Controller Ishwara or Bhagavan, Lord Sri Krishna, have all the qualities of the Supreme Lord in minute quantity, because we are minute Ishwaras, subordinate Ishwaras. So we are having that quality. We are trying to control nature as presently we are trying to control space or planets, and this tendency to control is there because it is in Krishna. So that is an introduction about the position, an introduction to the position of Ishwara and Jivas. There are multiple Jivas, there are many Jivas. Then he comes to material nature. What is material nature? Baladeva Devotion says, Sattvadit Gunatrayashrayo Dravyam Prakritihi. That Prakriti is the substance which is the shelter of the three modes of material nature. In other words, Prakriti or material nature has a certain effect on the living entities. You see, the Western understanding of this material world and the Vedic understanding of this material world are quite opposite in many ways. In the West, they first try to understand this world, and then finally they begin to question, okay, who is a living person? Why is he conscious? And so on. Whereas in Vedic civilization, they first begin by saying that there is an absolute truth, who is conscious. We also exist. That's the second topic. We are also conscious. And the third topic is, what are we conscious of in this world, in our present experience? That's the third topic. What we are conscious of is material nature. Material nature exists in order to be utilized by living entities. Material nature exists in order to be utilized by living entities. Just like a chair, the standard example is like a chair, asana what it is given. Just like a chair. Why is there a chair? Why do you create a chair? You create a chair for a person to sit and use it. Similarly, material nature is created by God for living beings. If living beings have no need for material nature will immediately be turned off. It will be unmanifested. This is a very, very important point. It's like a cinema exists for people to come and watch. Suppose nobody were to, let us say somehow, let us just imagine that people lose interest in watching movies. Immediately they'll shut down the cinema theaters. And they'll even demolish it or make it into something else. Because cinemas exist for living beings, for audience. Similarly, the material world, material nature exists for living beings. And what is the relationship? Material nature is meant to have a certain effect on living beings who have turned away from Krishna. In one verse of the Dashamul, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has brilliantly explained the nature of this word. He says, Swaruparthair Heenan Nijasukha Paran Krishna Vimukhan Harer Maya Dandyan Gunanigada Jalai Kalayati Tathasthulair Lingair Dvida Varanair Kleshanikarair Mahakarmalanair Nayati Patitan Swarganirayau. He says that those living beings who have turned away from Krishna, when you turn away from Krishna, then the next thing that happens, first of all, you seek your own happiness, and therefore you turn away from Krishna. When that happens, then you are deprived of your swarup. You are first of all put into an illusion that you are unable to perceive your own swarup anymore. Swarupartheyakinan nijasukhaparan Krishna vimukhan harer maya dandyan gunanigada jalai kalayati. So at that time, the maya potency of Lord Hari, it catches all these souls. And how does she catch them? She throws a web of the three modes of material nature on them. Swarupartheyakinan nijasukhaparan Krishna vimukhan harer maya dandyan. Because they are all fit for punishment, they're criminals. Dandyan gunanigada jalai kalayati. And then that's not enough. She doesn't put a web of the three modes. When you say the web of three modes, what it means is everything inside the material existence has an effect on our minds. It has an effect on us. It affects us. Now the effect that it has on us is not accidental. It is designed. It is programmed. It is intentional. You are being watched. You are put here in order to be watched. Just like suppose you are put in a jail. In some prisons in the West, they have cameras inside the jail. So suppose you think, accidentally somehow there happens to be a camera here. I'm very sure in some other room there won't be a camera. It's not like that. Even the camera is fixed even before you are brought in the prison. And there are people who watch you. They observe you. These people have been employed even before you came. Because it's pre-designed within the system. So the three modes of material nature are the main reason why material nature itself has been provided. So it is not that sometimes our devotees wonder, what are the three modes? We understand nature. It is of different types. If you look at the Western conception of matter, they break it up into elements and they have a periodic table and they try to study it. And our periodic table is very small, it's only got five elements. Earth, water, fire, and ether. That's all. So whether you go that way or this way, it appears we're just talking about certain substances. So sometimes devotees ask, so what are these three modes? But the first point is, first of all, there are three modes, and only then you start talking about earth, water, fire, and ether. Just like in a cinema, the first thing that they think about is a cinema, movie, and all that. And only finally they show you the silver screen. The screen exists in order for the cinema to be projected. If suppose no cinema comes to the theater, they will not allow you to see the screen. Similarly, earth, water, fire, air, ether is something like the screen. The three modes of material nature in certain combinations are what is the cinema. And it is the three modes which have an effect on the mind. That is what is the punishment. It's one of the punishments. So one of the punishments is we are psychologically affected in multiple ways. That is what material nature is meant for. Tatha sthulair lingair vivida varanaih kleshanikarayih mahakarmalanaih nayati patitan swarga nirayau. So then this Maya Shakti of Lord Hari, she doesn't just catch us in a web. Now when you're caught in a web, you cannot move out of it. It's like when you catch a fish with a web. The fish is caught inside it. It cannot move this way, that way. It's completely caught. And you can't say this is all just happening by accident and all. Purposefully you're caught in a web. Similarly, when Maya catches us in a web, and it is this web of the three modes of material nature, you cannot get out of the three modes. You're stuck within the web. So as long as we exist in material nature, we will be affected by sattva guna or rajoguna or tamoguna. Will be affected in multiple ways, constantly, in every way possible that you can dream of. We will be affected. But that is not, that itself is a sort of a torture for the living being. But on top of that, what Maya does is she covers the jiva with two levels of clothing. The first level of clothing is called the subtle body. The second level of clothing is the gross body. Tatha stulair lingair vivida varanaih klesha nikarai. But the way these two clothings or these two bodies, gross bodies and subtle bodies, are designed are that both of them are reservoirs of distress. They are reservoirs of distress. The very subtle body itself is meant to produce distress for the jiva. The very gross body itself is meant to produce distress for the living entity. So one problem is the three modes of material nature. Another problem is subtle body. Another problem is the gross body. It's just like, suppose I have a cut in my tongue and you call me for a feast. Whatever I eat is going to be painful. On top of it, if they don't cook the feast properly, then that is an additional problem. And on top of it, you, in the place where I am put, the place is infested with mosquitoes. So there's an additional problem. I have my own internal problem. My tongue is cut. So whatever I eat is going to be miserable. On top of it, the food is half cooked. And on top of it, there are mosquitoes everywhere. So these are three separate problems. Tatha sthulair lingair vivida varanair klesha nikarair mahakarma alanai nayati patitan swarga nirayam. And on top of all this, Maya catches each soul and shackles, you know, when they arrest you, they put you under shackles. And then the police, they pull you away. They put you under shackles and they pull you. So, Maya also catches us by her shackles. And what are these shackles? She creates a system of karma. That any activity we do which is in aversion to Krishna will produce a resultant reaction. Madhvacharya quotes from the Purana, from Brahma Purana, that any soul from the age of 14 or up, whether he is a boy or girl, any human being, any soul in a human body, if he performs any activity which is not within devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will produce a minimum reaction for 10 lifetimes. If you produce an activity which is in line with the Vedas, then you will attain happiness for 10 lifetimes. So you will have to take that many births. That's the whole point. You have to take that many births. If you perform activities which are against Vedic injunctions, then you will have to suffer. But it's minimum 10 lifetimes. We are counting minimum 10 lifetimes. So every activity that I do, any non-bhakti yoga activity that I do, from the age of 14, whether I'm a boy or girl, in a human body, I'm going to be caught. This is the system of action and reaction. So this is like a shackle which is pulling. So using these shackles, Maya pulls every conditioned jiva from Nayati Patitan Swarga Nirayo. She moves us all the way to the delights of the heavenly planets, down to the most miserable conditions of the hellish planets. This is what is actually going on. This is material nature. This is what is actually going on. So material nature is composed of the three modes of material nature, or not composed, it has the three modes of material nature as its attributes. It's constituted by three qualities, as Prabhupada writes. But it completely functions under Krishna's control. So this is called Jada Prakriti. Now the living beings, they are also Prakriti. In fact, they are called superior Prakriti. And material nature is called inferior Prakriti. Why is material nature called inferior Prakriti and the living entity is superior Prakriti? The living entities are called superior Prakriti because they are conscious. They are conscious just like the Supreme Lord. Now why are both of them called Prakriti then? Because the Supreme Lord is Purusha. He is the controller, he is the enjoyer. And the living entities, they are meant to give happiness to the enjoyer. And material nature is also like that. So Prakriti itself means controlled, like Prabhupada writes here. Prakriti is always under control, whether inferior or superior. Prakriti is female and she is controlled by the Lord, just as the activities of a wife are controlled by the husband. Prakriti is always subordinate, predominated by the Lord, who is the predominator. The living entities and material nature are both predominated, controlled by the Supreme Lord. So therefore, both of them are Prakriti. So one is superior Prakriti, one is inferior Prakriti. Superior Prakriti refers to the living entities. Material nature itself is constituted by three qualities: the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. Above these modes, there is eternal time. Traigunya shunyam jadadravyam kalaha. So above the three modes of material nature, there is a special type of material substance that is called time. Now, by time doesn't refer to what we see in a watch. The Vedic conception of time is not what it's not a measurable parameter that you see in a clock. That is the Western concept of time. Whereas the traditional concept of time is, Kala means a destroying force. Kala in Sanskrit actually means a destroying force. Kala, Kalayatamas means, of all the destroying agents, I am time. Kalosmi lokakshaya krit. I am Kala, which destroys the whole world. I bring about the destruction of the whole world. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, it is described that Kala is the force which brings everything to destruction. So by Kala, we mean the destructive force of the time energy. That's what we mean, and that is the same what we measure. We measure it in terms of a clock, but it is not just some passive parameter, as they conceive of in the Western civilizations. It is actually a destructive force. It destroys everything that you keep within material existence. It's touched by time, and it is going to be destroyed. This is another misery for the living entities, in addition to his own karma. In addition to the miseries caused by a subtle body, gross body, in addition to the web of the three modes of material nature, there is special misery which is inflicted by time in the form of destruction. My body is being destroyed. My child's body will be destroyed. My wife's body will be destroyed. Anything that I like is going to be destroyed. So time is another reason why living entities suffer. So time. Pum prayatna nishpadyam adrishtadi shabdavachyam karma. And then there is karma. Karma refers to activities. And they produce reactions. Activities which produce reactions are called karma. There is a nice definition of karma in the 8th chapter, right at the beginning. If you look at the 8th chapter, you will see. Arjuna just asks some questions. What kim tad brahma, kim adhyatmam, kim karma, purushottama? What is time? One of the questions he asks. And then 8.3, chapter 3, chapter 8, text 3, Krishna answers. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Aksharam Brahma Paramam, Svabhavo Dhyatma Muchyate, Bhuta Bhavod Bhavakaro Visargas Karma Sankitaha. The Supreme Personality of God has said, the indestructible transcendental living entity is called Brahman, and its eternal nature is called Adhyatma, the Self. Now he defines karma. Action pertaining to the development of the material bodies of the living entities is called karma, or fruitive activities. So any activity which is going to produce a future material body is called karma. Prabhupada writes, in material consciousness, okay, the constitutional position of the living entity is different from the position he takes in the material world. In material consciousness, his nature is to try to be the lord of matter. But in spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, his position is to serve the Supreme. When the living entity is in material consciousness, he has to take on various bodies in the material world. That is called karma, or varied creation by the force of material consciousness. So this is karma. Karma means that you perform activities which have certain reactions. These activities are being carried out from time immemorial, and we are suffering or enjoying the fruits of our activities. In other words, it's not that for any activity that I perform, the modern concept of activity is you perform some activity and that's all. It's like throwing something into the wind, it goes somewhere. But the Vedic conception of activity is not that you throw some ball into the sky. It is like throwing a ball on the wall. You threw the ball on the wall, it's going to come back and hit you. So every activity, material activity that you perform is going to produce a reaction. That information we receive from Bhagavad Gita, that activities produce reactions, actions produce corresponding reactions in accordance with the law of karma. For instance, suppose I am a businessman and I work very hard with intelligence and I have amassed a great bank balance, then I am an enjoyer. But then say I have lost all my money in business, then I am a sufferer. Similarly, in every field of life we enjoy the results of our work or we suffer the results. This is called karma. So this is karma. Eshu Ishwaradini Chatwari Nityani Jivadini Tu Isha Vashyani. Now within these five categories, Ishwara, Jivas, Prakriti, Kala and Karma, out of these five, the first four are eternal. Prabhupada writes, out of these five, the Lord, the living entities, material nature and time are eternal. They are eternal. That means the Lord is eternal. The living entities are eternal. Material nature is eternal. The destructive force of time is eternal. Jivadini tu isha vashyani. And the, amongst these five categories, the last four are dependent on the Supreme Lord. The last four means the living entities, Jivas, Prakriti, Kala and Karma. These are all dependent on the Supreme Lord. The living entities are dependent on the Supreme Lord for their existence and for their functioning, for their perception. They are completely dependent on the Supreme Lord. Material nature is completely dependent on the Supreme Lord. Time depends on the Supreme Lord. And the karmic actions and reactions are happening because the super soul makes sure that they happen. He is the one who is independently causing all these to function. These are all very important points which are repeatedly brought out in the Vedic scriptures. Repeatedly they bring out these points that the Supreme Lord is independent, whereas the remaining four, they are dependent. Prabhupada points out, the manifestation of Prakriti may be temporary, but it is not false. Some philosophers, Advaitavadis, Mayavadis, followers of Shankaracharya, they say that the manifestation of material nature is false. But according to the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita or according to the philosophy of the Vaishnavas, this is not so. The Mayavadi, Advaitavadi concept is Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. That Jagat is mithya, false. We don't accept that. That philosophy is not supported by Bhagavad Gita also. According to the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita or according to the philosophy of the Vaishnavas, this is not so. The manifestation of the world is not accepted as false. It is accepted as real, but temporary. It is temporary. Just like, for instance, but nevertheless we use the word false. We speak about it as false. Just like, for instance, suppose you are hungry, very hungry, and I ask you, so what do you want? I want some food. So then I show you a video about food on a computer screen. I say, here it is. Immediately you say, but that's false. It's false. You think it's real food. I'm interested in real food. Now when you say that's false, does it mean that I am imagining that something is being shown there, or you're imagining that something is being shown there? You're not imagining, it is real. But if for my purpose is I'm hungry and I need physical food. So that representation of food, even though it is real, it is temporarily manifested, first of all. The second problem is it does not have the characteristics of real food which I'm looking for. I'm hungry. I need the food which I can put in my mouth and eat. I cannot take that image and put it in my mouth and eat. Or like a plastic apple. A plastic apple. If I bring you a plastic apple when you are hungry, you will say that's false. You say it's useless. Give me the real thing, you will say. What do you mean by that? Does it mean this is false in the real sense? Like sometimes some magicians also produce some false object which actually doesn't exist. Or somebody can produce a hologram of an apple, but this is a real apple, real plastic apple, but because it doesn't give me the nourishment that I'm looking for in a real apple, therefore I say it is false. Similarly, we are looking for eternity, knowledge, happiness in this world. That does not exist in this world, and therefore we say it is false. In a desert, when I'm thirsty and I see a mirage and I run after it, then we say it is false. Why do we say it is false? Because I am thinking that there is water there. But there is no water there. Water is somewhere else. So therefore it is said to be false. So this concept of false has to be properly understood. The manifestation of the world is not accepted as false. It is accepted as real but temporary. It is likened unto a cloud which moves across the sky, or the coming of the rainy season which nourishes grains. As soon as the rainy season is over, and as soon as the cloud goes away, all the crops which are nourished by the rain dry up. Similarly, this material manifestation takes place at a certain interval, stays for a while, and then disappears. Such are the workings of Prakriti. But this cycle is working eternally. Therefore, Prakriti is eternal. It is not false. So therefore, Prakriti is eternal. It is not false. The Lord refers to this as my Prakriti. Krishna refers to this as his Prakriti. Since he is eternal and he is real, his Prakriti is eternal and it is also real. But the manifestation is false. The manifestation is false. The cinema theater is eternal and it is constantly existing. But the cinema show is not constantly being shown. At certain times it is being shown, at certain other times it is not being shown. So it is like that. So what we are interactively experiencing in this material world right now is we are like put in the middle of a three-dimensional cinema. It is like a 3D video game, something like that. So because it's constantly as a cycle, it is being shown and not shown, shown and not shown, shown and not shown. We understand that which is showing is eternal, but that which is shown is temporary. However, the other item, karma, is not eternal. The effects of karma may be very old indeed, but karma is not eternal. karma tu prag abhava vad anadi vinashicha. Karma does not have a beginning, but it definitely can have an end. Karma can have an end, which means if you engage in those types of spiritual activities, you can get out of material activities and which produce reaction. So it is very much possible to get out of karma. We are suffering or enjoying the results of our activities from time immemorial, but we can change the results of our karma or our activity, and this change depends on the perfection of our knowledge. We are engaged in various activities. Undoubtedly, we do not know what sort of activities we should adopt to gain relief from the actions and reactions of all these activities. But this is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita. So, because we are in ignorance of what type of activities we should do to get out of karma, we are stuck. But through knowledge we can get out. We have spiritual knowledge, we can get out. Tatra samvit swarupopi ishvarah jivah cha samvita asmadarthascha. Now both the Lord and the living entity are conscious. They are both conscious, but material nature is not conscious. The position of Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, is that of Supreme Consciousness. The Jivas, or the living entities, being parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are also conscious. Both the living entity and material nature are explained as Prakriti, the energy of the Supreme Lord, or one of the two, the Jiva, is conscious. The other Prakriti is not conscious. That is the difference. Therefore, the Jiva Prakriti is called superior, because the Jiva has consciousness which is similar to the Lord's. The Lord's is Supreme Consciousness, however, and one should not claim that the Jiva, the living entity, is also supremely conscious. The living being cannot be supremely conscious at any stage of his perfection. And the theory that he can be so is a misleading theory. Conscious he may be, but he is not perfectly or supremely conscious. So the idea is that Krishna, he knows everything in past, present, future, and he knows everything, literally. He knows everything, he is conscious of everything. But the living entities are not like that. The living entities cannot be conscious of everything. I am only conscious of what happens in my body. But the super soul is conscious of what is happening in everyone's body. That we will understand from the 13th chapter. When we look at the 13th chapter, it will become very clear. Where Krishna will say that there are every living entity is a kshetrajna, is conscious of his particular body, which is his domain of action, his field of action. But Krishna is sarvakshetrajna. Krishna is conscious of every body. Just like in the Vedic system of governance, citizens are given plots of land and they own that land. But they are actually secondary owners of the land. The primary owner of the land is the king actually. The king is the actual owner. The secondary owner, for time being, he allows you to own. So you are the secondary owner of that plot of land. So just as a king, he is the actual owner of the entire kingdom. But the living entities are secondary owners of their particular plots of land. Like that, Paramatma, he is actually present everywhere and he is conscious of all the bodies. But the Jivas, they are conscious of particular bodies. So that is the difference between the Supreme Lord and Paramatma. We should not forget this. The Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of God, is living in everyone's heart as Ishvara, as the controller. And he is giving directions for the living entity to act as he desires. The living entity forgets what to do. First of all, he makes a determination to act in a certain way. Then he is entangled in the actions and reactions of his own karma. And then he forgets. He forgets what to do next. So we get stuck with we want to do something, and just like a child, you know, wants to do something, and the child is absorbed in something and completely forgets his original desire, his previous desire. Now he's absorbed in desire number 2, and after some time he gets absorbed in desire number 3, and he forgets desire number 1, desire number 2. So like that, the Jivas are also like that. This happens through lifetimes. In my previous life I desired something and I very much wanted it, and this lifetime I want something else, and now I very much want this, and in my next lifetime I want something else, and then I very much want it. So in that way we go on life after life, we are chasing our desires one after another. But the Supreme Lord, He tries to fulfill every desire of these conditioned souls, just to show them that whatever you are desiring here doesn't work. These activities can be changed when the living being is in the mode of goodness, in sanity, and understands what sort of activities he should adopt. If he does so, then all the actions and reactions of his past activities can be changed. Consequently, karma is not eternal. All this explanation is just to make it clear that karma is not eternal. That means that we can, that if we fully surrender to Krishna, Krishna will cut off karma. Karma nirdhati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. That if we fully take shelter of bhakti yoga, then Krishna will cut off karma. So karma is not eternal. No, in the material mode of goodness, at least we are able to conceive of liberation. And then you begin the work. But ultimately one has to come to pure goodness, to actually get out. But at the stage of sadhana, the mode of goodness is considered very helpful, very conducive. Okay, we'll stop with this. There are still some pending points, but there's not enough time. So I'll stop now. A lot of points here also. There are some points which I'm going to skip. Paladeva Devi should give some quotes and certain complicated concepts. I'm going to cut them out. Okay. Anything to clarify? Yes.
There's a point that Krishna can be understood by one who Krishna chooses.
Yeah.
So, what are the criteria?
Krishna specifies the criteria. He specifies the criteria. When you engage in devotional service, then it is possible for you to understand. Bhaktiya mam avijanati. And therefore, you engage in devotional service. Mad bhakte tad vidyaya mad bhavaya upapadyate. My devotees understand all this. So therefore, we engage in devotional service, and then Krishna, when he is pleased with us, he reveals himself to us. That is how we understand that. What is his criteria for choosing? He's not irrational or whimsical. He has specified in the scriptures that he has a criteria based on which he chooses.
So completely bogus.
When God wants, here they'll say, Jokon Bhagavan Tanbe, Tokon Ami Mayapur Asbo. When the Lord will pull me, then I'll come to Mayapur. And then we tell them, yeah, but who's pulling you to your cinema hall? Nobody's pulling you. Why do you go there? You go there by your choice now. So why don't you come here by your choice? So the initial initiative has to be taken by the Jiva, and then Paramatma follows it through.